Hi, you're listening to Kate
and Catherine,
and we're going to show you how to find your Prince Charming so that you can finally live happily ever after, forever and ever.
No.
We are definitely not going to do that.
We are sick of that story, and it's a lie.
It is a lie.
You're listening to The New Truth, a modern woman's guide to extraordinary love.
We are going to show you how the fairy tale love story stops you from experiencing the love you truly desire.
Listen to hear how to break free from sacrifice and struggle in relationship.
And learn the new truth about love in a way that you've never heard it before.
We're so happy you're here. Keep listening.
Hello, beautiful. Kate Harlow here. I have some really exciting news before you get into this week's really powerful episode. I'm very excited for you. I am offering my 5-day totally free expanded love masterclass for the first time since August. Now, if you are a woman who's been consuming the podcast and you are so happy with everything you learn, but you really want to take your learning to the next level, you really want to learn how to break free from your patterns running relationships, right? We talk about it on the podcast. But this masterclass is designed to help you get so intimate with your patterns, with your saboteur, as I call it, you know, whether you're a fantasy addict, whether you're a perfectionist, whether you're a self-sacrificer, there's so many different saboteur archetypes, 5, in fact. And this masterclass, I get intimate with each one of them and not only teach you all about how that archetype might be affecting your romantic relationships, your friendships, your dating life, but also I show you how to break free from them. So it's an incredibly empowering week. I was actually just in Kenya and one of my clients was on the retreat and she said, we were talking about the masterclass coming up and she said, oh my gosh, Kate, like I did the masterclass in 2021 and my whole entire life is a completely different world. Changed everything because she learned how to live from her heart and live from her truth as opposed to from her patterns. So if you are experiencing anxiety in your relationship, you're attracting toxic men, you're not attracting anyone, you are having a hard time receiving love, whatever it is, this masterclass is for you. It's a game changer. And I would love to hang out with you for a week. It's totally free and super inspiring. Everyone who's done it before comes back and does it again. It's such a beautiful community of women inside of a private Facebook group. So if you don't have Facebook, get it or borrow someone's login to join us in the masterclass. You have to click the link below this episode or in my Instagram account, which is The Unscripted Woman. Click the link in my bio on my website, The Unscripted Woman, or just below this episode to register, grab your spot, tell all your friends. This masterclass is life-changing for your friendships too. So would love to see you there. And if you have any questions, send me a message and I'll see you soon. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, hello. Oh my goodness. Everyone, take a seat, take a deep breath, buckle up. If you have loved the New Truth podcast and the mission of the New Truth podcast, you are about to fall in love with Dr. Nadine, the ex of the Wolf on Wall Street, who has written the must read book. I have not been able to put it down, Run Like Hell. And today we're going to talk about trauma bonds, pathological liars and lovers and how to set yourself free. And I was sent your way actually by a friend. And I once I connected with you on Instagram and your mission, and I was just, you know, before we even hit record, I've been crying about how much energy there is around this book and around this message right now and how it needs to enter the heart of every woman in the world. And as you listen to this episode, may you feel less alone, may you feel empowered, may you feel rooted in the truth that you deserve safe, healing, and healthy love, not abusive love, and that we can finally put the fairy tale to bed. Like, it's time. It's time to put the fairy tale to bed. So I'm going to read two paragraphs from Run Like Hell, and then we're going to get started. So here we go. As women, most of us grew up knowing the Cinderella story, and as young girls, we often believed in the fairy tale, the idea that a handsome, charming prince would sweep you off your feet, pursue you with an endless passion, and rescue you from your worries, troubles, and sorrows. Surely this instant electric attraction would transform into a happily ever after relationship, a living example of fairy tales coming true. But there is a reason the Cinderella story ends with the wedding scene, because so often what started as a fairy tale ends in a nightmare. If your Cinderella story has become a nightmare, empathy is not enough. You need someone who has experienced what you have, not someone who is looking to see what is wrong with you and why you stayed in the toxic relationship. Because the truth is, for some toxic relationships, there is no warning and no red flags. There are no friends or family saying this person is dangerous. And the fairy tale tells you, you know, we joked before we hit record too, that the fairy tale tells us the person's going to rescue you, when actually what's going to happen is they're about to use you and exploit you and abuse you. Yeah. So Dr. Nadine, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being who you are, saying yes to your healing path and your work in the world and writing this book.
Oh, thank you so, so much. Yeah, it's been a long journey to get here. But I think we're all here and we're having this really very, very important conversation. So and I'm happy to dive in.
Let's dive in with the story of meeting Jordan at 22 years old.
Yeah. So I grew up in Brooklyn in the 70s. What a great time to be a child, you know, no social media, no playing on the street. And I was raised by a single mother who was very psychologically minded and taught me about feelings, and we talked about everything. So I had that foundation. And then she was a single mom. And so I needed to go to work early to make money because nobody was really handing me anything. And that was okay. And I started to model in New York City, which is a very tough gig. I don't really recommend it to anybody. You have to have super thick skin, but I did need money. My parents didn't really give me anything. And so I was having a ball. I was living in Brooklyn Heights, running around the city with my best friend, going to Studio 54, listening to Madonna, and dating and having a great time and making my own way in the world. And it felt really good to make my own money at that age, as hard as it was, because I was about 19, 20. And then around 22, I think, or 21, so I lived in the city. I would go to the Hamptons on the weekend. And as the movie shows in The Wolf of Wall Street, I went with my boyfriend to a party at my ex Jordan Belfort's house. Wasn't as big a party. It was a smaller party. And as second I walked in, I got the strangest feeling because everybody was just acting weird. Now, I didn't know at the time they were all on Quaaludes.
What are Quaaludes?
So Quaaludes is really like a downer.
Okay.
I think it's a little bit like we would say Xanax this day, but it also has a little bit of an upper in it, so you don't get quite so sleepy. So it was a party drug. And but what happened was that one of his friends had exposed himself to me, and I felt horrified and humiliated. And I said to my boyfriend, we have to leave, and we leave. And then my ex, I guess, had set sights on me and actually paid somebody or made somebody $15,000 in the stock market to get me to go out. So he right away already had set the stage for that and set the whole thing up. Now, I didn't know this woman was calling me. I was like, why is this woman calling me? She said, I just want to go out to dinner with you. And then she said, well, that guy, Jordan Belfort, is going to come. And I said, why is he coming? Isn't he married? Like, that's so weird. She's like, what do you care? I said, I don't care. So right away from the beginning, I was set up.
Wow.
Right. There were all these things going on behind the scenes that I had no idea. So I showed up being the naive babe in the woods that I was. And I was having dinner with her. He sauntered over in his cowboy boots out of his Ferrari, sat down next to me. And I was from Brooklyn. He was from Queens. And hence, you know, we just started to talk and we just really got along. And that's how I met him.
Wow.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. And then I was traveling a lot for modeling. That was when I did the Miller Lite commercial, and I came back. We were at the same gym, and we ended up going out on our like official first date, and then it was off to the races.
What happened to the boyfriend you had?
He was gone.
And was he married?
I had broken up with him. Right. I had already broken up with him. Yes, he was married at the time.
He was married. Okay.
But, you know, he had an apartment in the city telling me he was separated.
Right, as they do.
At 22 years old, I was like, oh, he's separated? Okay, yeah, you have a separate place. And then, you know, 6 months later, I was engaged. And 6 months later, basically, I was married. Because that's what happens in this sort of trauma bond.
Yes.
Love bombing. And that intensity, that fast pace to get you locked in.
Yes.
Now, I didn't know that at the time. At the time, I thought it was, he was just up with me.
Right. Well, I think that's what most women believe. I have so many clients who that's like when they have a really calm, grounded, Catherine and I always say, you know, it's aligned when it's calm and grounded. And so many clients who are used to that high intensity adrenaline drama, but that, because that's what we're shown in movies.
That's what we're showing in movies. And he, like a typical pathological person, was very dominating, intimidating, and controlling. So he started to like threaten me. If you're not going to marry me, I'm not going to date you. If you're not going to have kids, I'm not going to marry you, right? So already the high pressure, dominating, threatening, intimidating behavior was starting. But I didn't know back then. You know, I had never... You know, one of the myths that I like to debunk in my book, I didn't have a lot of developmental trauma. I wasn't yelled at. I wasn't abused. Did I have an imperfect childhood? Of course, like we all do. But so when he started to yell and dominate me, I was like, what's happening? And I just was like, oh, he just must love me so much.
Wow.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's something I was also moved by in your book, and really what we try to do on the podcast, which is, it's not like, do I believe people need to do childhood healing? Yes. But the patriarchal conditioning, like the whole energy around love in our culture, is more intoxicating than any childhood trauma, right? It becomes intoxicating for someone who has had childhood trauma and has never known love. Yes. So then love bombing feels like I hit the jackpot, right? Like someone's giving me all of their attention and affection and presence and energy. But most of all, we have such distorted ideas about what love is. And women think intense desire and control is love. So let's pause around this then to do like, what is love bombing, and like, what is a trauma bond?
Sure. So love bombing is when someone gives you intense admiration, affection, lavishes you with trips and gifts, and gives you very early promises of them being your soulmate. And the way I describe it is, if it feels too good to be true, it probably is.
Yes.
Right. And so again, but you have to remember, 25 years ago, nobody was even touching these topics,
right?
Touching them. So I had no idea. Fed all these stories from Disney and Pretty Woman and Wall Street, like all the movies of my era, that this was what love was. Right. And then a trauma bond has to have two conditions. It has to have something called intermittent abuse or intermittent reinforcement, which means 70 to 60% of the time, the person is controlling, manipulative, abusive. But then the 30 to 40% of the time, they're kind, generous, and helpful. And so it's the extremity of these behaviors that make you feel extreme feelings. And that's actually what creates the bond. And I'm sure you read that, when I read this, I was blown away, with animal trainers, when they use intermittent abuse with the animals bonded to their trainer 230% more.
Wow. This is so important, because that's why the hook. Every woman who's in any type of emotionally abusive, physically abusive, in that is, oh, but I'm so confused. You know, sometimes he's so loving and the best partner. And so, yeah, wow.
But that's the hook, right? So, and then the second piece is the power imbalance. And so a power imbalance really means, you know, who makes most of the decisions in the relationship about money, about children, about finances, about where to live, about what you do for work. Like if we use my ex-relationship, you know, I was modeling at the time and my ex was like, you don't need to model. That's ridiculous. I make more money, right? I was like, okay, you know, all right, makes sense. But that's somebody who has more power. So, and he clearly had more power than I did. And so what happens is that person exploits and abuses that power, because when you trust somebody, they can do that to you. When you're emotionally dependent upon them, they can do that to you. And also they gain more power by being dominating, intimidating, and disparaging you, because they instill fear into you.
Right.
So it has to have those two conditions for it to be a trauma bond. But at the very end is control.
Right.
Right. Because coercive control, wanting to control who you are and how you move through the world.
Right.
And that's your sense of self.
Go ahead, Kate.
I was just going to say, I imagine, just would have changed, like become smaller and smaller. What was noticeably different, maybe externally or internally, when you were going through what, like, as the control and manipulation was occurring?
I think it's like if you think of yourself as an onion and your core is in the middle, like it's that slow peeling away of the layers of who you really are. You can't have emotional needs. You can't really live life by your values. You can't authentically express your emotions, right? If we think of love as two things, quality of connection and giving someone the space to be who they are, that's gone. The right. space to be who you really authentically are is taken away from you. And then you're a shell of yourself. And it's a slow, insidious process. So for me, you know, I think I was able a little bit to hold on to myself because of my extreme conscientiousness. So I would take cooking classes and wine classes and interior design classes. So I always kind of had my own thing going, which I think saved me a lot. But he just totally, he was large and in charge, and that was it. It was his way or the highway. I couldn't have any voice.
The needing to be saved, like it's like the perfect setup of the fairy tale says, and Kate and I talk a lot that even now the like conscious relationship is the new fairy tale, right? Like it's still in our culture. Like if we are really paying attention, nothing's actually shifted. It's still about perfection, right? And being rescued from pain and disappointment and what it takes to actually navigate a healthy relationship. And what I was going to actually say was you've used the term pathological lover in the book over and over. And I'm sure you're seeing that right now there's also an obsession with narcissists, right? Like everyone's a narcissist. Are you in, you know, recover from a narcissist? Da, 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 da. And so I'd love to just really like anchor the difference between a pathological lover and a narcissist and your thoughts on the overuse of that word now.
That overuse is ridiculous. I mean, because let's first describe what a pathological lover is, and then we'll go back to how ridiculous narcissism is. So a pathological lover, pathological simply means mentally unwell. Because the way I think about it is that somebody who will use, exploit, betray, and deceive somebody that they love to get their needs met for money, power, pleasure, and status, they're mentally unwell.
Yes.
They're not a healthy person. And so under the pathological lover umbrella is the dark tetrad, which includes narcissism, psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and sadism. But then that person usually has impulse issues, impulse control issues. They usually have a compulsive process disorder, like a sex addiction or gambling addiction. They can have a substance abuse problem, and they can have a mood disorder like depression, anxiety, or bipolar. So you see, there are just so many different layers to this person. And so just to call them a narcissist is ridiculous, because a narcissist is the lightest of the dark tetrad.
Right.
Self-absorbed and self-interest, and they'll certainly exploit people and they're very into their image, but they're not always a psychopath. They're not, they don't have that cold, callous, very shallow emotionality to them. Now they can, but they're also, and they have a little bit more of Machiavellianism, which is the real strategic planning to use people. And then the sadism is when they get pleasure over seeing people that they love hurt. So just, I to call them all narcissists is misinformation. And it just simplifies a very complex personality that then again, I think, causes the victim to have shame. Yeah. Because, you know, I think I wrote this in my book, like if it took me 10 years of school and 13 years as a clinician and 5 years of doing deep research, and I'm trying to explain it to everybody, how is a regular person going to understand this pathological person?
Right.
They're not.
They're just not hooked into it and fall for it. And yeah.
And different pathological people have different nuances of all that.
Right. Right. And I can just see how the world we live in sets us up to be, it sets women up to be vulnerable to this, our conditioning around love and around what it looks like and how it's supposed to feel and fast and furious and hot and heavy and love bombing. Like that is in all the movies. I love you. I hate you. Like that dramatic love is what's represented everywhere. And then also the fact that no one teaches us how to do relationship. So nobody, there's no context for, unless your parents had a healthy relationship, but even then there's no, we don't have to take courses on it. There's no context for how to have a healthy relationship, how to know how to have a healthy relationship, of course, with yourself, which is at the root of it all.
Yes.
So I just see, did you see the Tinder Swindler?
Yes.
The Netflix show? It's just like, that's another perfect example of how women are just like set up for this.
Yeah. And I'm glad you bring that up, because also if you think about it, you know, we're taught that these charismatic con men are who we should fall for.
Yes.
Right. Like, forget about the introvert in the corner who is actually has a moral compass.
Yes.
Person, right. Like, we love James Bond. He's a psychopath.
Right.
So we're fed this myth in that way as well. And I always say in school, it's reading, writing, and arithmetic. Why not add another R, a relationship?
Yes.
I agree.
I dream of that.
100%.
I dream of that for the world.
Me too. And
the core of the simplifying a complex problem, it keeps feeling like the so long as women are, for lack of a better term, like asleep, like so long as we're programmed millions of messages, there's something kind of, I can feel the intoxication about just calling him a narcissist, so that I actually still stay asleep.
Yeah.
To becoming the agency of my own life, right? For choosing what healthy love is. And like, if as long as we just keep throwing blame around, no one actually has to heal. No one actually has to grow. And the amount of times for me, because what's also the other side, right? The narcissist and the empath and the narcissist and the codependent are always together. So then women say, oh, okay, well, I'm just so deeply understanding and compassionate of his trauma, right? Like I understand why he is the way he is.
Yeah.
That does not help you change your life. That doesn't help you change, you know, anything about the dynamic. And I think the amount of, you know, I believe intellectual understanding masks our feelings, right? So if I keep chasing understanding, then I don't actually have to feel what it's like to be in this relationship or what it's like to be a woman fed these messages about love. So I'm so curious. And I think it's important to now, like, let's keep going with your story of, okay, 6 months later, we're engaged. 6 months after that, we're married. What then happened when you had kids? Like what then happened when?
Yeah. So what happened was
the unfolding.
his temper, his need for control really grew. And so it didn't go away, right? He would get mad at me at the craziest things. And I just would be like, what? And it was mind-boggling. Like one time I was taking a golf lesson and I was like, oh, I'm going to stop and get us lunch. You know, being a nice young wife, I come home. He's like, you're fucking the golf pro. And I was like, what are you talking about? But that possessiveness and jealousy, right? They accuse you of the very thing that they're capable of. Now, again, I had no idea. I just was like, this is insane. So, but then, you know, me being an agreeable, kind person would try to calm him down, as you're saying, get to understand him, yada, yada. But that just intensified. And then that combined with his drug addiction, which was super, super, super intense and very toxic and caused him to even be more abusive than he was. Like, you know, as they say, substance abuse doesn't make an abuser, but it exacerbates the abuse.
Right.
But then I would confront him about it and he would go crazy on me. And so then that was our dynamic. And then again, I would try to hold on to myself by doing like the things that I mentioned before. And I, you know, I had my beautiful children, but inside I was dying.
Right. Did you feel like you were going crazy? I know that's one of the most common things. Yeah, so, like, did you blame yourself at all?
I don't know that I blamed myself. See, luckily for me, my ex was so insane and it was so obvious.
Right.
That it made it a little easier for me not to think that I was crazy, but I certainly didn't feel like I had agency.
Right.
I didn't feel like I had any power in my own life. And I just think I felt broken down and beaten down. And kind of obliged to this way of being because now I'm trapped, the money, I'm supporting my parents, there's a whole lifestyle, right? And I'm a conscientious person that has integrity, so I want to make it work. I'll do anything to make it work.
Right.
Not that I wanted to enable him being abusive to me, but that's a part of the conscientious trait that we'll get into. I would do anything to make it work.
And what was anything? Like what were the kinds of things you were doing to make it work? Besides staying?
Yes, like just, you know, like you say, maybe trying to figure out a better way to deal with him, a better way to be. If I do this, it will change him. I used to joke, like if I hang myself upside down and vomit out green from my mouth, like change, you know, just anything that I could to make our lives better. But as much as I was trying to do that, I was fighting against someone who was much more determined to not, or just crazier. You know, you can't control crazy.
Right.
And he has power. And he's controlling everybody around us. So everybody's kissing his ass.
Right. That feels like the most important thing too, of how, you know, I think women, like I want to offer, like, women, we believe you. Like, if you are listening right now, like, we believe you. We believe you. We believe what it was like and what it might be like now to be in relationship with your pathological lover right now. And what does it take to leave? Right. Because if you have, I think it's also important to, you know, you wrote a lot about, you can have an empathetic and understanding therapist, but how many therapists still perpetuate the idea that it's your fault, right? Why can't you just leave? Uh-huh. You know, why? Oh, you're just codependent. You're with an addict. So you should go to Al-Anon rather than, really educating about the power and abuse cycle and walking through what it takes to leave. Cause I know so many, I mean, as a mother right now, I had a moment in early postpartum where I was like, I get why women stay. Like, once the child, like, I'm going to cry. Like, once that my baby came, I understood completely why it's so hard and how you would do anything to keep your kid safe.
That's
and you can't even imagine co-parenting or just not seeing them on the weekends, like whatever it might be, you know? Yes. So I just like the main message today, and what I think you have done so beautifully in your book is like, end the victim blaming and like actually call to attention the therapists and coaches that are perpetuating the victim blaming of their clients too. So let's talk about this.
Yeah. Because, you know, like I said, you know, everybody said I was codependent, and so what do I do? I'm codependent. Oh my God, I got to learn. I got to self-reflect. I'm as much of the problem as he is. No.
No.
Right. You're gaslighting yourself.
But I believed it because these fucking experts are telling me this.
Right.
Right. And granted, were there things I needed to learn? Sure. At 31, did I learn how to set boundaries? Did I learn how to say no? But that's also a normal part of development. Right. As an adult, as we develop into an adult, these are things that we have to learn. I didn't need to learn it because somebody was abusing me, and torturing me and lying to me. You know, I didn't need to do that. And so, you know, my therapist was a good therapist. She wasn't like the ones that I write about in the book, but it's still, nobody was naming it. Nobody was blatantly saying you are in an abusive relationship. And now I say that to my patients. And the number one thing, and Lindsay Bancroft writes this in Why Does He Do That, which is another excellent book, abuse is never the fault of the victim.
No.
Ever.
That was something I wrote down. It was actually one of the things I first texted Kate when I was reading your book, like the statement, you have it, the line in your book, abuse is a problem that lies with the abuser.
That's
period.
It.
No one is saying that. Except you and the author of Why Does He Do That? No one is saying that.
Yeah. Like, I am not responsible for Jordan's drug addiction, for the way he treated me. There was nothing that I did to warrant that.
Right.
Nothing. And all your listeners who are listening to this, just, they really have to know that, because there is a lot of shame and self-blame.
Yes.
But remember, they're also twisting the table on you. He wasn't as much like this, but oh my God, I think I write this in the book, and I don't know if you got to this part yet, where literally there's a guy laying on top of a woman. He's cheating on his wife and sends her a picture and says, "You made me do this." This is how bad it can get.
Yes. Yeah. And women already are so geared to blame ourselves and to the self-sacrifice and please. And so I think, you know, that I think of all the women I've worked with I work with mostly with divorced women, and a lot of them had cheaters, narcissistic, who knows where on the spectrum that you're talking about. What was the term? Psychopathic lover?
Pathological lover.
Pathological
lovers. I'm sure some of them definitely would fit into that category, and women blame themselves. That over and over and over again. What did I do? Why did he leave me? Why did he choose her over me? Like, we instantly go to self-blame.
Instantly. And, you know, and we're told that too.
Yes.
You enabled him. Well, I've never met a person that enabled somebody to abuse them.
Yes.
Well, if you feel the shift of, if he love bombs me because he loves me, it then has to be that he's abusing me because of me too. Like we have to get that we're actually conditioned to believe we're responsible for a man's behavior in general.
That's right.
Right.
Yes.
So that's it. Like, if he's not love bombing because he loves you. He's love bombing because he's a pathological lover.
Yeah.
Right. Because, like, we have to learn what it means to know when you're actually loved. If you're actually loved, you are free to be who you are. Right. There is shared power. Your thoughts, your opinions, your feelings, your needs matter with someone who loves you.
That's right. That's right. And I'm glad you brought up that part about the love bombing, because when I work with my patients, what I tell them, and I tell them this, and I say, I'm going to say something that I know is going to hurt you. And I'm going to say it knowing that, but you need to hear it. The love bombing was just as much a manipulation as the control.
Yes.
When you see that everything's a manipulation to control your response to them or to control your behavior, that's when the cognitive dissonance, which we'll get into, starts to melt.
Yeah.
Because it's confusing. But I say that to them on, you know, and I warn them and just say, I know that this is painful to hear, because then you at least want to believe that the love bombing was real.
Right.
Like, but right. It wasn't.
It wasn't.
Yeah. And that's the hardest part, I think, is, well, no, there's many hard parts, but one of the hardest parts that keeps women so hooked in is like that hope and dream. But it was so good in the beginning, but actually realizing that that isn't what good feels like. Good feels peaceful. It feels grounded. It feels slow. It happens naturally and organically over time. It doesn't happen in 5 minutes. It doesn't happen in 6 months. Like, that is not what real good feels like, or healthy relationships feel like.
Right. Yeah. Peaceful is worth $1 billion.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it's their conditioning. It's every freaking TV show, Grey's Anatomy, The fucking Bachelor, everything, every show is like high, low, drama, chaos, crazy. He loves me, hates it, hot, cold, all of it. Love bombing. It's a setup.
Yeah. And I always say, it's the hook.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm curious in your story. I want to hear more of your story. And also, I'm so curious how much of the movie felt true. Were there parts that felt not true for you?
Yeah. So the rest of my story is that, so then I just lived, what I call it, dysfunction junction, you know, getting off the merry-go-round of, is he good? Is he bad? Is he good? Is he bad? You know, and just trying to hold myself and my children together. And then what happens is a year before I leave him, I confront him about getting sober. And I say, I'm going to leave you because I'm not going to sit here and watch you kill yourself. And that's when he throws my clothing and jewelry in the fireplace and lights them on fire and gets ridiculously emotionally and verbally abusive to me, to the point that I wouldn't even repeat it because it's triggering just for your audience to speak like that. And that was when I went to the closet and said, God, give me the strength to do this. And I went to my mother's that night. My kids were fine. I had excellent nanny there. And that's when I came back to the house. He told me he was going to take my daughter to Florida on a private plane. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. And then he was walking with her and he kicked me down the stomach. So, I mean, I could have, and I went down the stairs. So I really could have cracked my neck and broken, but luckily I was 31. I was in the best shape of my life. And my mother had warned me and said, when you go home, tell them you're going to a domestic violence situation and call the police. She wanted to kill me, but I said, no, you'll incite him more. And so luckily I had done that. So after he kicked me, I ran up the stairs, dialed 911 and hung up. And that was like kind of where in the movie they show him driving my daughter kind of into the wall. It was into the garage. And I had the good idea to tell my housekeeper, close the garage. And so she took her, and then he got arrested. So that was like the real like moments for us. Then he came back, and of course he was coming back for us. So he did get sober. Mm-hmm. So, but then I was done with him.
Right.
Can't go through all that. And then, but then I stayed with him. Then a year later he got arrested, and that's when I left, because I knew I was safe, because he had an ankle bracelet on. The whole world knew he was a criminal. He was my emotional criminal, but it was now so blatant that he was not right that I knew I was safe to leave.
Wow.
So that's why, you know, when people like some, you know, male trolls on social media will be like, oh, you left him because he lost all the money. It's like, no, I left him because for 7 years he was emotionally, verbally, and physically abusive. And he finally got arrested and I had a ticket to ride.
Right.
So I'll say to my patients, it's like, I'm sorry, your husband's not going to get arrested. I had it easy.
Yeah. Right. You had an easy out.
I had an easy out.
Wow.
And I took it. And I took it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then my life, my new life began. And you have a new life.
Wow. And then, so when the movie came out, what was your reaction?
You know, luckily I'd been in therapy for 20 years, right? So I've been in therapy forever. I had discussed and processed all my trauma so much. And first the book came out, I mean, and then the movie, and I did a lot of work around it. And then I just surrendered. And I said, Nadine, this is bigger than you. Like, there's something going on here that's I can't fully understand. And that's okay right now. So the movie came out, and really I was mostly concerned with my kids. on how they were going to take it, and then how they were going to portray me, of course, because now I'm becoming a therapist. I am a therapist at this point, and I'm just like, honestly, the movie becomes the ultimate form of gaslighting.
Yeah.
Because he gets to say through his narrative, but I have to say the movie did not portray me poorly, and I was fine with how it portrayed me. Again, it wasn't my narrative, but I was okay with it. And the main difference in the movie is, in the movie, he shows me always getting angry at him about women. I never got angry about him about a woman.
Wow.
Ever. I never threw water in his face. I probably should have. He kind of makes me like the one with the temper.
Right.
I kind of find ironic.
Hysterical, really.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, that doesn't mean, I mean, I'm from Brooklyn. Like, I can go at you. If you push me hard enough, I'll come back. I don't know, But that was the main difference, is we really fought a lot about his drug addiction. That was what the big fights were about. But he made it seem like it was about other women. And that's okay. I mean, that's his fantasy, I guess.
Right. On some, I'm just thinking like classic man, like, yeah. Oh, or I mean, right. Narcissistic.
I didn't do the scene of the nursery. I'm not that sexy.
Right. Right. Wow.
But
so
were all
the
gifts real? Like, I know on your Instagram, it's so powerful when you do the like clip from the movie and then was this real? So they're like buying you a boat, right? Like,
right. But again,
it wasn't that extreme.
It's like, I didn't want a boat.
Of course.
He didn't buy me the boat. I was like, we have a 2-year-old and an infant. I don't want to go on a boat.
Right.
I can't swim.
Right.
I never wanted that boat, right?
Right. Like, it was about him.
It was all him. He wanted the boat and have his big ego and call it the Nadine. I could give a shit.
Right.
And it was so, the gifts. But the gifts were always there. But he would buy me jewelry. I'd be like, return it. Now, that didn't mean some of it, the money wasn't fun. Of course it was. But that money doesn't make you happy.
No.
And that money doesn't keep you safe.
Right.
Like the thing that, like, you said at the beginning of the episode when we started talking about the book too, that the fairy tale, I've been thinking a lot about this now as a parent, right? That how you talk about your kid becomes what they believe about themselves, right? If you say you're shy, then they take on the identity of I'm shy. So what's the message that women get inside the fairy tale? You are helpless and powerless and without agency. Like, that actually is in every movie. So then if you can't, like, your identity as a woman becomes, I don't have power.
Right.
Right. So then you believe the love bombing, you believe the pathological lover, you think, oh, now I'll have money is power. Oh, if I have money, now I have power. Or if I look a certain way, I have power. Or the premise of the New Truth podcast is thinking you have agency just because you have a partner. Right. Now I'm worthy. Now I matter. Rather than what real healing is if I have absolutely nothing, I have power. Like, I am safe because I can trust myself and I have my own back and I believe in my own thoughts and desires and dreams, and I'm worthy of that. And I can make that happen for myself. I don't need a knight in shining armor to come and make that happen for me.
Right. And I like to always define power, because I think that's what you do. And it's simply the ability to influence yourself.
Yes.
That's it. Right. So the new relationship is, I have power over myself. Whoever your partner is has power over themselves. And you are connected. Nobody has power over, right? That's what the hierarchy, the patriarchy is. It's a hierarchy, power over. And then the second thing I want to address is the safety, is that I thought that, this is the funny thing. I was like, when I was marrying Jordan, I was like, oh, he'll keep me safe forever.
Right.
And I tell my patients this, playing it safe is the most dangerous place to be.
Yes. If someone else is your safety raft,
don't do it.
You're going to be sinking soon. Yes.
Yeah, but he said that myth. And so I was like, oh, here he is, my safety raft.
Right.
I used that metaphor, but I forgot what the opposite of it is in my book. But no, you end up like in a tsunami with the safety raft and,
Castle. Does the safety raft does nothing for you in a tsunami. No, it's a tiny little thing.
It does nothing.
You know, any woman I've ever worked with, or even friends who have even healthy relationships where the man has all the money, they're not fully in their power. They don't have sovereignty over choice. It's like, oh, I've got to, let me talk to my husband first and let me see if, you know, I can get that money from him, basically. And still there's a perception, even if they're working full-time being a mom, right? Which is the hardest job in the world. And their husband goes to the office and comes back. Even though they're working too, and that's the agreement, they never, ever, ever feel like it's their own money. I've never once met a woman who doesn't have her own money, who feels like she has total sovereignty over that money.
Right.
So even just that, and how much the fairy tale messaging is about this too, about the dream of having money. I was, as you're sharing all this, I'm thinking I had a guy that I worked for, this online sports gambling company, many years ago. I won't get into the full story, but he love bombed me at the beginning. And as a friend, I was very clear I wasn't interested in him romantically, but he gave me tickets. He flew me to LA, flew me to Toronto, gave me gifts. And I was 23. I'd never been with a man with money before. And I was like, oh, I accepted those gifts as a friend, quote unquote. It went sideways later, but I can see. I never considered that to be love. Like, I just didn't think about it because he wasn't a romantic partner, but he fits like all the criteria that you share. And I just think how many of us, especially when we're young, like just in the fantasy of wanting to be swept off our feet and have someone come take care of us and put us in a big castle. And then what happens is you end up alone in the castle in so much pain and not having the support around you. What were your friends like during this time? Like your own personal friends?
My friends were awesome. You know, again, they were young too. And let's just say their husbands were under his Midas spell, as I like a lot of times, not all of them, you know, especially my girlfriends from Brooklyn, you know, a little different than the friends I met through the office where their husbands worked for him. But I had a very, very strong group of friends. But again, nobody's penetrating that wall. Nobody penetrate that wall that he had put up, that the myth had put up. It really, I had to do it. It was my work.
Yes.
You know, I got myself into there. I had to get myself out, you know, the heroine's journey, right?
Yes.
I had to get myself out. And I think there is a moment when I realized that, like, okay, it's me and these two kids my daughter's a therapist. I'm going to cry when I talk about them. They're the most amazing humans on the planet. And my daughter's a therapist. My son's a musician. And I was like, it's me and these kids. And I got to save them. You know, that's my job as a mother, to protect them. Like, they're little, they're vulnerable, they are helpless, right? I wasn't helpless. And then and then slowly but surely, I just rebuilt myself and went back to school at 39 and got my doctorate at 45. And then what was happening was that the movie had come out and I still had really never made the connections about anything. But all these beautiful, smart, kind women were coming into my office. And I just was like, wait, we have a problem. We have a fucking problem here. And being the true academic that I am, thank you, Mom. So we can't just be pretty, Nadine. You better be smart. And she was right. And I went back to the research. And I just did so much research and I was like a crazed fucking mad scientist. I mean, my research papers were everywhere. I traveled with them all over the world. My friends would be like, we're going to the pool. I'd show up with 20 research papers. They'd be like, what are you doing? Get up coffee stains and food stains. But I was just determined to do this. It was something bigger than me. I don't know what.
Yes. Yes.
Can't say it was all me, you know. And then it was the hardest thing I've ever done was to do this. And writing the second chapter was called Is He Twisted or Tender? was very, very painful to get into that darkness of that person. But it just birthed itself.
And you're backed. I mean, I can feel like the ancient feminine god, all the goddesses are this is the tsunami of backing you, of this energetic support that this book will get into the hands of millions of women. And Kate, I know you have a question too, but I feel like there's a moment here for what does it take to leave, right? So you make this joke of like, I had an out, but then you have patients, you know, every day that you're working with to help leave. Like what do women just need to know besides go run and get the book and then run like hell, but
they need to be
the importance.
Yeah. They need to be prepared to leave. Because this person wasn't nice to you when you're with them, they're not going to be nice to you when you leave. You know, that's just not going to happen. So the most important thing I say is never let them see you coming. Never let them know that you're going to leave. Because you can't totally take them off there, like, you know, by chance. Like, you have to surprise them, which is hard to do, I know, because you have to play pretend. But you've been playing pretend
already.
Relationship, so play pretend for your own reasons, and then you have to get with a therapist or a group or some sort of expert in pathological love who believes you. And even if they don't fully get it, to get for them somebody, if like you have a good relationship with a therapist, and if you don't have the money to go into therapy, I always say this, that to become a licensed therapist I had to do 3,000 hours for $5 an hour. Find people that are training even to be a therapist, okay? Because you need the support to do that. You need, and you, because you need to resource yourself emotionally, financially, get your own credit cards in your own name if you don't have them. And I have a whole chapter on that, right? So emotionally, financially, relationally, spiritually, you have to have tons of self-care, because post-separation abuse is very real. And sometimes the most dangerous time for a woman is when she leaves, like what happened to me. Right. When I said I was going to leave. So you have to resource yourself in every way that you can and plan right from the beginning, especially if you're married with children. Now, if you're not married with children, you don't own property, right? You don't have to go as deep as this. But the main things are, don't let them see you coming, and get with a very educated person. And also, you know, have someone who can be like almost an accountability buddy. Someone, when you say, but he was so nice, he was so this. And I always say, but go back to the facts.
Right.
I betrayed, he abused you, right? But you can do it. I mean, it's very, very feasible. And I know it feels insurmountable when you're facing it, but you can do it.
Yes. And I know you have tons of online resources like videos, and your Instagram is Dr. Nadine. Is that right?
The real Dr. Nadine. Yeah.
Oh, the real Dr. Nadine. Okay. So that's your Instagram. And then we'll link everything below as well. But do you have any online courses or anything?
I'm writing it right now from the
Amazing.
Book.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I started a group called Trauma. I think it's called tbrdrnade.com, where for like $9.99 a month, women can just become part of a community. I do like an Ask Me Anything one live once a week, and they can all communicate with each other, because I believe that we are our greatest resources if we allow ourselves to be, because in this process of leaving, women are in many different stages. Some have done it, some are in the beginning, some are in the middle, some are still in it. And shared information is key.
Yes. And stories, how the importance, I mean, how healing your story is.
Yes.
And for other women to be around other women who are at phases further along than them, and how healing that is. Catherine and I talk about, gosh, on every episode, the importance of sisterhood and community for women, and being surrounded by people who love us and support us and hold us to our highest and are willing to help support the way. So yeah, amazing. So that's on your website.
Yeah, it's on my website now. I just launched it like 2 or 3 weeks ago. So we're just getting it up and running. And then I'll deal with the course, because everything takes time.
Yes, I love that that's coming though, to go with your book and go, I mean, run like hell Is it going to be on audiobook? I mean, yes, will there be an audible version?
I did the audiobook myself. So about 2 more weeks, it'll be.
Oh, amazing. Yay. I just looked it up. I was going to get it today. I'll be the first to purchase it in 2 weeks. I also wanted to say I could feel I had such goosebumps when you were talking about, I can really feel about the movement and that it's bigger than you. And I can really feel that that's why the book came out and the movie came out, not for him. It came out for you and for all the women on planet Earth who are ready to be free from these toxic trauma bonds and toxic abusive relationships. It's way too common. And it is time to eradicate this and for us to rise as women and stand together and tell a different story and empower each other with new stories. And I can feel the power of your story and how the Wolf on Wall Street is like, it's the platform, right? It's the way that
it's the perfect vehicle for me.
Exactly.
You know, and that's why I say to my patients, you know, a lot of times that look at face value, like, why the hell is this happening to me? Pause. You don't always have to know. Surrender.
Yes. Yes.
Do the work and see what emerges.
Right. And life is leading us. And that's what, I mean, I heard that in your story earlier too, this, I just surrendered to it all happening. And now you can see like it literally is the wave that's pushing this momentum forward.
Yeah. Thanks, Jordan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Jordan. Yes, and Leonardo DiCaprio and Margot Robbie and the whole crew.
That's right. Yes.
Yes. Beautiful.
Well, you ladies are just so wonderful.
You are too. And I don't know if we're out of time, but there is a part of me that wants to just acknowledge what it feels like for you to now be in your relationship. You know, like how you met your current husband and
I didn't know there was one.
Yes.
And
dating. Cause yeah. a lot of women are single listening to our podcast too. Yes. And it's like how, you know, if it isn't, I'm sure it's in the book. I haven't gotten to that part, but the, you know, just maybe core signs of the pathological, that's not just love bombing, you know, but the core signs to spot, and not from being afraid, because I know every 2 seconds there's a new Instagram post about red flags and everyone's now like out of their mind about afraid of everything. But this place of like, when you know, really to trust yourself. And I mean, really what you said earlier is like, if it feels too good to be true, it probably is. Like that in and of itself is so potent. But I would love to just give some space for how healing, because I believe love is healing. You know, like I do believe when you're with the right person, it softens the places where there's been hurt, right? From past lovers, from childhood, you know, that it brings us into more of who we are when we're with, you know, an aligned person.
Totally.
But just would love to give space for that.
When I met my current husband, so I've been with him 24 years. So we blended our families. He has 3 daughters and I have 2 children, as I mentioned. So we have 5 and now 2 grandchildren. And the thing, when we talk about red flags, you know, someone who doesn't respect your boundaries, someone whose words don't match their actions. I have a whole pathological lover checklist on my website.
Perfect.
But to talk about green flags, is I always say, if someone can't hear you, they can't love you. And my current husband, when we first started to date and we'd have disagreements because they happen, and he'd be like, oh yeah, I get that. And I was like, what?
Whoa.
You heard me?
I was like,
they can't love you. I have goosebumps.
Yeah. And he could hear me. And you know, we were younger when we first met. I was 32. He was 43, I think. And we certainly, you know, it was a lot to blend families, but we did it. And like I went back, talked to about in the beginning, you know, him being super supportive of my going back to school and even being supportive of this. Like, I'm sure it's not fun for him to listen to me talk about my ex-husband all the time, right? But he knows, he respects my mission. He understands my mission and he knows I love him. And he's giving me, honoring actually, the space of who I am right now.
Right.
Right. You know, he doesn't feel threatened by it. He gets it. He's my PSS. He's my assistant. He is very supportive of me. And so I think when we first met, maybe he was, and he was like maybe more in his power than I was in mine. But now what's happened is he softened and integrated more feminine, and I've gotten more into my masculine, right, to become more whole. Cool. So that's what real love does.
Yeah.
Kind of teach each other how to be the things that we weren't given the space to be, whether through society or our family.
Right.
And it's nice. And it's possible. It's really, really, really.
To love again. Yeah. Or to have real love.
Yeah. And it's work and it's effort, but it's very peaceful and boring.
Perfect.
That's it. Right.
That's how I would describe it. Boring.
And so I'm curious. I loved hearing this story. I didn't know you had another husband of 24 years, and I have goosebumps all over. What felt different in the beginning when you met him to the Wolf on Wall Street?
Really, he could hear me, and also I think I was more aware of boundaries and not being afraid to express who I am, right? Mm. That was also part of my work. I was older now. And him just really accepting me and being a big advocate for me, like not feeling threatened so much by what I was doing. And he loves children. I love children. So we loved parenting together. And we had like-minded interests. We love pizza and same
in Brooklyn.
Yeah, having a lot of the same values.
Yeah.
You know, but and again, it's a real relationship, so it's super messy. I mean, now we're older, so it's less messy, but it was pretty, that was also messy in the beginning, you know, in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't abusive.
I was like waiting for that line, because what's happening is the amount of clients I've had, and this is my truth, I wasn't in an abusive relationship, but I was an on again, off again with an avoidant and shape shifting to try to get him to love me. I mean, I did that for 3 years with somebody. And what I would tell myself, because I was deeply involved in personal development at that time, and I talk about that often, what I would say is, well, all relationships are hard. All relationships are messy. All relationships are imperfect. And the amount of times I hear that from women who are in just, it doesn't necessarily mean abusive, but just dysfunctional relationship, justifying it by being messy. And it's like, you are in a safe relationship if when it's messy, you're still respected. You're still heard. Mm-hmm. You don't question your reality, and they're not questioning your reality. Like there's, you're going to go through hard things together, but you're not saying to yourself, I now feel unsafe. Right. And like, I'm not okay.
Not feeling like super adversarial, somebody has to have your back. Somebody has to be on your side.
And yes.
Just, you know, that you don't have disagreements, but yeah. And so that's, yeah. So, and again, he's super supportive, and you know, he's happy to support me in this endeavor, which means everything.
Everything.
Yeah. Takes a lot. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, I have a million questions, but the good news is you have a million resources. So it's like read the book, go to your website. We're going to make sure all the links are below. And we always say at the end of every episode, you know, if you needed this message, like share it with another woman who needs to hear this message, right? Like that's how we have one another's backs as women. It's like, remember the truth, right? The new truth.
That's right. And to know that, you know, in healing yourself, and I say this to my patients too, you know, when you're healing yourself, you're healing everybody.
Yes.
You're not just doing this for yourself. You're doing it for all the women in the world that need healing.
Yeah.
We need role models, and we need examples of this happening, because it's possible.
Yeah. Together we rise. I just think for all the women who don't have children to do it for, you know, and don't yet have that intrinsic self-love built in to do it for themselves, do it for all the women on planet Earth that, you know, there's some women who are in situations who actually can't leave because they're in physical danger. And let's do it for all of them, every woman on planet Earth. And I feel emotional now. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing. I can't wait to read your book, and I'm deeply honored that you are on the New Truth podcast and we get to share your work in a big way. And yeah, just thank you for having the courage. It takes a lot to do what you're doing, and you're amazing. And I'm really grateful.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies. Yeah. So lovely to meet you. And I hope our conversation continues.
Yes, me too.
Hi, it's Kate. Thanks so much for listening to the New Truth podcast. For more of Catherine and I, come hang out with us in the New Truth Movement Facebook group. We are in there. That's where we're sharing all about our programs and our free workshops that we do. You can come join us there and ask as many questions as you want about the podcast episodes, about dating, relationships, any struggles you're having out there. We would love to support you. So come hang out with us in the New Truth Movement Facebook group, and we will see you soon.